right, here we are with Stani. Stani, it's so great to have you back on the Defiant podcast.
Thanks for having me here. I think we do it every couple of years now.
Yes, it's a tradition. So, of course, Stani Kulichov is the founder of Aave, the now largest lending protocol in DeFi. Aave is now under an umbrella called Avara, which also includes Lens, a Web3 social media protocol, and Family, a Web3 wallet. So, like you just mentioned, Stani has been on the show twice before in 2020 and 2022. And each time the Aave and now Avara family, it grows larger and larger and just more all encompassing. So very excited to have all your updates. You've definitely become one of the major leaders in DeFi and Web3. And I know, you know, we've heard your story. But for those who haven't listened to previous episode, I would just love to start with your journey, what led you to crypto and starting Aave, and then we can get to specifics on the protocols itself.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a quite an interesting story because I think it was 2016 when I was quite interested in thinking of like how to create like financial applications on the blockchain. And that was after the DAO hack, and EtherDelta was, I think it was like one of the, well, like first like functional decentralized exchange. And I was thinking that, you know, there's a way of trading assets in a non-custodial way where, you know, you hold your assets and, you know, you don't need a centralized exchange. And I was thinking maybe something similar could be done also in lending and borrowing and being able to earn interest and supplying digital assets and being able to borrow against them. And that early 2017, we built ETHLEND. And later, 2022, we built the Aave protocol, which is just iteration of ETHLEND, more in like a pooled model. And over the years, version 1, 2, 3 is the latest where it's now cross-chain in the sense that it's deployed in multiple networks, I think in 12 different networks, including some of them are layer twos. And then more recently, last year, we started to develop the Go stablecoin to help the liquidity crunches on the Aave protocol and ecosystem. So that's kind of like has been like the background and story. And it's been amazing to see that Aave has grown significantly over the past years and really has been a really functional protocol, and it's governed by the Aave DAO now. So we have as Aave Labs, we basically, which is part of Avara, we have a kind of like limited role in the whole Aave DAO. So that's been super exciting. And then obviously the past couple of years, we tried to tackle a new problem to solve, which is decentralized social and basically turning into social networking to user ownership. So things we do every day. So creating profiles, creating connections, making content and sharing content and thinking how we get that data out of centralized databases and create a decentralized protocol. So that's been also like a big part of my work since the past 2 years now. And a couple of months ago, Lens went permissionless, which means that anyone can go and create a Lens profile and they basically own it and can make connections. And the reception has been quite exciting. So still a long journey to go with both of these projects in terms of like actual mainstream adoption, but glad to see that there is already like an early user base for in DeFi in general, but also for Lens.
It's, you know, such an ambitious task to take on lending and borrowing, like money markets and even a stablecoin on the one hand, and then also take on social media on the other hand. Why did you choose to you know, these two specific verticals, and how has it been like to manage those two just, you know, huge projects?
Yeah, I've been thinking kind of obviously it's not always like a smart idea to try to build multiple things at the same time and have multiple projects, but maybe I'm a little bit crazy in that sense, but at the same time, I do think that finance and democratic access to finance is really valuable to humanity. And overall, I think blockchain can really help on giving everyone the same equal right and opportunity to participate into these markets, but also at the same time, see everything that is happening as well and having that transparency. So I do think like from the DeFi perspective, I think it's just such a valuable value proposition to bring to everyday users that it makes sense to work on this for a very long time. With social networking, I just think that we create so much social capital. So we create profiles online, we create connections online, and we consume a lot of content. We read a lot of things, and I feel that the amount of data we produce and content and make these connections, we don't really have the ownership as a user to the things that we actually create and produce. Bitcoin and crypto in general does really good for owning money and having a kind of like a neutral monetary system. And DeFi makes finance more programmable. And I think that solves pretty well. And there's a lot of people working on that. But for like decentralized social, there isn't that many folks working yet on that. And I think being able to kickstart the ecosystem and being part of it and basically progressing social into a state where, you know, users own their own profiles, their audiences, and they have more control over things that they create is very valuable. And that shifts the power from platforms to these users. And that means that users have actually the right to choose what platforms, algorithms they want to consume or content moderation policies. And I think it just creates better and fair social spaces. And if you have fair social spaces, that drives more discussions and innovations, and it helps DeFi, but it also helps anything that people want to build and innovate. So I do think it's a big task to solve, but I feel like I'm not alone here. Like there's a big community in Lens that feel the same way and are supporting and following the same vision. So that's been really helpful as well.
Yeah, I think it's become clearer and clearer for most of us in crypto and Web3 that we do need a decentralized social media protocol or model or platform. And hopefully it's becoming clearer to a mainstream audience as well that we've been giving away all of our data and information for too long, for basically for free, to all these big companies. And yeah, hopefully, you know, we can have a way to take it back. So yeah, I think these Lens and Web3 social hopefully will be the way to do that. Would love for you to explain what Lens actually is, because for most listeners, when you know you think about social media, you'll think about, you know, what the front end looks like you'll think about Twitter or Facebook, but Lens is like a base layer to build those things on top of, right? So if you can kind of explain what that is.
Yeah, the way I explain it is that Lens enables this idea of being able to build on a shared social network. So the way I think about it is that today, like all these social networks are kind of like platforms. You have to basically join a platform, and there is no way of taking your data somewhere else. Like, let's say the people you meet, the connections you make, and all that data that is registered are in those databases. Like, you don't really have a way to port that data. And then Lens is effectively a set of rules on smart contract that create a social network that is shared. So when you create a profile, that means that profile isn't in a database of a centralized social media application. Instead, it's on the blockchain. And the connections you basically make, they're also secured by the blockchain. And also you can secure the content with data availability or blockchain as well if you create, for example, art and you're a creator. So what we're actually doing with Lens is that it just takes some of these so-called like social primitives, basically a profile and links to other people like connections, and leverages the blockchain to secure the ownership for the users. So in some case scenarios, some users might know that they're using, for example, Lens when they're using one of these applications that are using Lens protocol. Some might actually don't know that they're actually using. And the way I see it is that Lens doesn't have a app, like a centralized app where everyone goes and starts their experience. Instead, it's a protocol-only approach, the same way as there is no there's Ethereum as a network, but there is no Ethereum as an application. There are wallets that support Ethereum or applications built on Ethereum, DeFi, for example. And Lens kind of follows the same philosophy where there isn't like a one access point that is going to be the dominating application. Instead, we gave the space for developers to go and build these experiences and leverage the protocol and basically create a feedback loop where we understand what needs to change and improve in the future to make a kind of like a shared, fair and open shared social network. So you might be using something like Orb or Hey or Butterfly or any of these applications. When you log in and you create a profile, you might be knowing that you are on Lens and you might not. And I think in the future, most of the onboarding experiences will happen with a gasless and signless as it is today, but also with embedded wallets, account abstractions. So you don't really need to know as a mainstream user that you're using a decentralized social in the background.
Was it hard to resist the urge to build your own app on top of Lens? Like I'd imagine, you know, as someone who wants this thing to get adopted, your first inclination would be, okay, now I'll build the thing to bring people in. Like how did you think about that decision of just like letting others handle that part versus doing it yourself as well?
I mean, it is scary, right? So I guess the challenge there is that, you know, if we build this, well, will people use it and what they will build and kind of even build better than existing social media applications that are online now. And obviously, like, there's no real answer until you try it out. And I do think that in the beginning, it was quite challenging because everyone was building something new. And I think that we had, like, a couple of generations of builders. Like, the first builders were super excited about Lens, and they wanted to build existing social experiences, like basically what we see with Twitter and Instagram. And the second generation is more of like a remix culture. So what if we try something like a little bit new here? And Orb is a good example of that, that it feels something new. But yeah, it was really, it was really kind of like hard and bigger lift because you have to grow the whole ecosystem. But looking backwards now and seeing how much we empower developers and we don't have like one entry point that makes the feeling more decentralized, but also shows that we don't want to compete on the same experiences with other developers. And I think that's a pretty cool statement to have.
No, I can imagine how scary that must be for a builder to just, you know, let others take care of the really, you know, key part of just bringing people in, but it does make it more decentralized. So I think it's a really interesting approach. And how did you go about fostering this developer community that's even more key around Lens since you're not building that dApp?
Yeah, I actually like, obviously what we try to do a lot is that build a lot of tooling around Lens and make it as easy as possible to build. So that was like one aspect. We participated in a lot of hackathons and organized them. Hackathons are a great way to see how people, you know, experience the technology and what they can actually do with the protocol. But also kind of like recognizing those teams that are really seriously, they want to build a new paradigm for social networking and be part of that journey. And I think we have a handful of really good developers that are excited about building a bit more open and fair social networking model and building those experiences. So I do think that's were one of the more key components for attracting developers.
Did you have a grant program as well? I guess the hackathons are part of that.
Yeah, and overall, grants are really, really good because I've talked to a lot of developers and that might be, they might not be doing crypto at all. So something that I really vision is that I want to onboard a lot of developers that are not in our space to build. And to attract that, you know, they might have daytime jobs or they don't have the possibility to put focus and work on something like this necessarily at this early stage. So grant program is amazing way to empower these developers to try and build or just experiment with the protocol. And that's been something like grants in general has been really helpful all the way from Ethereum Foundation giving grants for meaningful projects and across the whole ecosystem. I think it's just like a really, there's actually developers that are just, you know, focusing on helping protocols and building through grants. And they're doing just as fine as people who are trying to build startups in this space.
This is important. Solana is having their largest community conference called Solana Crossroads in less than a month. There will be over 3,000 plus attendees coming to Istanbul. Speakers include Anatoly Yakovenko, Raul Paul, Ansem, and basically everyone you'd want to see from the Solana ecosystem. From what I understand, tickets are almost sold out, so be sure to check the link in the description. So far with all the different dApps being built on Lens, are you seeing that a few are concentrating most users or is it, you know, just many of them are getting most of the activity? Like, what's that distribution been like? And how are you seeing that people are using Lens so far?
Yeah, I would say that we do have quite power user community. And those power users, they kind of have a strong alignment or like a philosophy around decentralized social. So you basically have users that are super excited about Lens and what we're doing, and they like the fact that it's quite open. So there is Lens improvement proposals to change anything in the protocol, which has been very helpful. And you have like open discussions. Hey, is an open source app that basically had over 100 contributors so far. And I think that's incredible to think about, because mainly like social apps are closed source. You know, you can't just go and make a pull request on a big social app. And here you can actually do that. So that's really cool. And then there is actually like a user base that prefer Lens over existing social media platforms because it's more casual. I think newer social apps and networks tend to be a little bit more casual, so you don't need to craft too much of your kind of like a content and you know, think about too much like what kind of responses you might get. And what I think is going to be really cool going onwards is new excitement experiences. Oh yeah, and also I think that the fact that you can collect content on Lens is something that a lot of the creators are leveraging, because you can post your content directly on social and people can collect it. So that's really, really cool.
Yeah, definitely want to ask you more about the like Web3 specific experiences that you can have. But before, if you can give me a sense of the most interesting stats that you like to track about Lens and what that traction has been like so far.
Yeah, I mean, I do track. There's like a nice dashboard made by C-Lounge. So it's a small team that has been building like a really interesting dashboard. And they approached our community and built one. So obviously there's 305,000 profiles minted. And what's interesting is that you basically pay Atmatic for a profile. You can pay with a card as well. And then you truly own that profile. And, mm-hmm. and the price there is kind of like to mitigate spam. And I don't know if it's going to be a long-term kind of like a solution or at some or whether there will be sponsored profiles in the future. But it definitely like showcases that you have to have a little bit of commitment to join Lens. And we don't follow daily active users because it's a protocol. So we don't have the data from like how people are opening the social apps, you know, how they're scrolling. We only see data of actions. And what I like about Lens is that the Lens users are actually earning as well at the same time. So when they share content that gets collected, they can actually earn on that. And the user activity dashboard shows that the top users on Lens, they're earning over 10,000 USD in annualized. And what I think is interesting here is that when you use traditional social media applications, you don't really get any kind of compensation. You might get rarely, but Lens kind of like has this monetization completely by default, which is really fascinating.
Awesome. Okay, so yeah, I see here. I have the Dune dashboard for Lens, and see that there are almost 380,000 users. And yeah, there's also many thousands of daily transactions and so on. Ready to dive into the world of on-chain derivatives? Syn Futures is your decentralized portal to trading futures and perps with up to 100x leverage. Now live on Blast Mainnet, Syn Futures V3 combines limit orders and concentrated liquidity into a single unified liquidity model dubbed Oyster AMM, offering unparalleled capital efficiency. Earn triple airdrop rewards through an incentive program designed around Blast and Syn Futures points. And join the new Trading Grand Prix competition to win a piece of the $500,000 prize pool. Visit synfutures.com to start your decentralized trading journey today. That's synfutures.com. This stat that you mentioned about the $10,000 of annualized revenue for sharing content is super interesting. Can you explain more about how you get that number?
Yeah, so basically, the monetization is available by default on Lens. So some people use Lens without thinking about monetization at all. But then you have creators that actually think about monetization. So you can collect monetization with follows, paid follows, or making the content that you create collectible. And you can split fees with any users. And anyone that shares the content, collectible content, can earn as well. So those are the main things. And also there's like tipping. Tipping is quite popular. And more recently with the open actions, it makes Lens more composable. So for example, you can make a Uniswap swap directly on Lens and share the fees with yourself and all the other, maybe like whoever reposts the open action. So the whole idea of kind of like a Lens is to show as well that, you know, you can do a lot of these financial transactions directly on social and the social feeds. And I think that's a really powerful thing because everything is composable and connected on chain. And being able to do that where we spend most of our times, which is more or less like social media and in the attention economy, it's a really great way to get distribution for even DeFi and any types of on-chain products and protocols.
It's super interesting because it's a totally different model from traditional social media and media in general. Here you are selling your content directly to your followers. while in Web2 social media, monetization comes from sponsors and ads most of the time. So how do you think that fits, or does it fit in Web3 at all? How do you think there will be room for ads and sponsorships?
Yeah, I think like what I've noticed is that social networks and social media is very heavily monetized. So social media companies, they're one of the biggest companies on the planet. And the way it works is that advertisers are paying directly to the platforms and rarely give a cut for the actual users and creators, especially for users that don't, like, they're just using and consuming content, right? So it's a really kind of like an unfair, unbalanced situation, because the users, they don't own the data. All that data is in social media networks databases. And what I think is that, you know, if we own our own networks and our own like social capital, we can decide if we want to monetize that or not. And if you have a like a very interesting following of let's say book readers, and you want to recommend a book and you want to share something about it, you could basically earn from that audience, and they might like the fact that you also shared the book, and there's this transparency there that, for example, that there's some sort of like incentivization there. So this another problem is not just basically making the monetization fair, but the second kind of like problem that we have in social media is that when you have these influencers, you don't really know, are they advertising purely on the basis that they like a product, or is there some sort of financial transaction? And I think it's totally fine to have a financialization and incentivize content, but being able to verify that to the user is very beneficial, in my opinion. It creates just more fair and better and more open social spaces.
For sure. So the way that you think that it works is basically the platforms themselves, like the social media companies themselves, will be disintermediated, because users will be able to sell their data directly to advertisers if they want to. Like they will be able to decide whether they want to do that. Is that how you think it works?
I think it's even about, let's say that if you have a following, an audience that trusts you, you're able to leverage your community and share, let's say, content with your community that is incentivized without kind of like a compromising also your values. So the fact that, for example, that you have a distribution and you can share incentivized content with your audience, and they know that, and they can even like have a share of part of that revenue and be part of that monetization supply chain. It just makes there will obviously be direct to consumer type of situation where you kind of like a little bit undercut maybe the advertisers or like undercut the platforms, but in a healthy way. So applications will always be able to monetize and algorithms, but they don't have the monopoly of deciding, you know, whether you should get paid for that or not, for example. I think that's a key component, like kind of like how to get the power and mitigate the power that these platforms have, and give this power to the users, and create more just a fair economy.
Have you heard about Safe? They're not just pioneers in crypto custody, but they're also leading the way with smart accounts. With Safe, managing your crypto is smarter and safer than ever. They've secured over $100 billion in total value and are available in more than 15 networks. Safe is also revolutionizing the industry with their full compatibility with ERC 4337, making it super easy to integrate wallets into your daily crypto activities. And for crypto enthusiasts, Safe has something special: the Safe Pass Activity Rewards Program. Launching soon, it's a fantastic way to engage and earn rewards. So what are you waiting for? Visit safe.global, sign up for the Safe Pass Activity Rewards program and secure your spot at SafeCon during the Berlin Blockchain Week. Be part of the transition that's setting a new standard in the world of custody. What role does crypto play in all this? Is it like a more efficient payment tool, or like does it make tipping and micropayments easier? Like, yeah, like what? How do you see that like tokens being integrated?
I do think that crypto makes super efficient monetization rails, like by default. So that's probably like a big value proposition there. Being able to pay with someone with USDC is, you know, or Go today quite cool, because once you send the payment, you know that the payment, like you can look at the block explorer and see that that payment went through. You don't have to ask the recipient or call your bank, you know, and deal with any of that stuff. So it's very efficient. And EVM, so Ethereum Virtual Machine, makes it programmable as well. So you can create different kinds of things, like on Lens, you can share the monetization. You can basically program that if certain, let's say that if someone collects a content, maybe 10% goes to donations of that, maybe 20% goes to something else. So you have that kind of like a payment rail aspect. And also the way we use blockchain is that we want to establish data integrity. So there's different ways to build decentralized social networks. So there's like blockchain models and federated models. We believe that using blockchain is a way to ensure a data integrity and consensus of the state of the data. And once you have data integrity, you can create censorship resistant assets or protocols or other types of primitives. And what I mean by censorship resistant, I mean that you can create a ownership structure where people own their own identities, their own assets, and so forth. And I think kind of like the risk of federated models is that you still are running a client server infrastructure. And then even if you are incentivized to run it, it's basically to pay for uptime. And I think what blockchain does pretty well is that in a federated model, you might have a problem where if someone asks you to, you know, take down or change the format or the data structures, you might, there's nothing stopping you, you know, being evil. But a blockchain consensus means that on every block, there needs to be a consensus of what is the data. So I think that's how we kind of like use blockchain, which is the basis of crypto and cryptocurrencies. And then the next step is to solve is privacy. So how we enable these kind of censorship resistant social primitives and create ownership for the users, but how do we enable also privacy so people can actually decide what to share to these applications, and also how to make private transactions. And that's something we're super kind of like interested in at the moment and doing a lot of research.
Yeah, I think that'll be key in order for Web3 Social to grow. I think most people will be concerned about having all their information and transactions just like in a public blockchain. So that's great. And speaking of blockchains and tokens and so forth, you mentioned you recently went permissionless in I think it was in February. How has the experience been so far? And also, why did you decide to wait until now to do it?
Well, going permissionless wasn't really our idea. There was someone from the community created a LIP, and LIP stands for Lens Improvement Proposal, that you can create on GitHub. Basically saying, like, you know, what's the point of waiting? Like, Lens is imperfect. Like, the protocol isn't necessarily perfect now, and it's a journey. And why not going permissionless now? And there was a discussion back and forth, and there's like a general consensus that Lens should be open at this point, and people should just be able to create their profiles and And also, like, I personally agreed with the Lib and the author that there is really nothing stopping at this point. And for us, we've always wanted Lens to be more community oriented in a way that we don't want to do all the decisions, and we actually can't. We don't have all the answers. So having that community support was really a strong signal of moving forward. And I think it will anyways will have happened in the upcoming months for sure. So far, the experience has been really cool because during that two-month period, these users that were minting profiles, they paid like 8 Matic to mint it. And what it means is that it generated like at peak of 800 something thousand USD worth of protocol treasury, which was really nice to see. So I was super excited about going permissionless, and it really kind of like made more Lens what it is, kind of like an open, permissionless, open source protocol that, you know, everyone should be able to benefit and build on. So it was really kind of like, it felt like a lot of weight was lifted from our backs, and we're happy that we got the support that the community members also wanted to see it happen. So that was big for us for sure.
That time, another Web3 social app has, you know, gained a lot of traction and popularity with Farcaster. What are your thoughts on that model, and how is it different from Lens?
I think their model is quite heavily reliant on the federated infrastructure and then using some of the primitives on-chain. I personally think that all these blockchain-based models are going to have like three challenges, obviously. I mean, it's a typical like blockchain scalability trilemma between scalability, the costs, and decentralization. So based on these three kind of like things, every protocol that aims for decentralization or decentralized social has to think about. I do think down the line that there's a lot of benefits that comes on utilizing a lot of the blockchain and on-chain infrastructure, not just for the payments role, but creating the ability to establish identity ownership, creating links between users and truly owning audiences, and just doubling down on the composability, that the more things are on-chain, the more composable they are with other protocols. And I think that we probably will see more things being built in Web3 social. And the bigger mission is actually to figure out how do we actually get the masses and can convert more audiences from the traditional centralized models and leap into the decentralized decentralized future. And I do think that to succeed, it's going to rely a lot also not just on the protocol, but on the application layer. And on the application layer, I think we have to see a lot of novel new experiences that people come and build. And those new kind of social spaces that are basically by default based on decentralized technology could be the way to actually take this technology for mainstream. And I do believe that social will grow faster and get faster adoption into mainstream than, for example, DeFi. I think finance is so fragile, and you have to have a mature financial system to get adoption in technology. And we're not there yet. So we might be there in a half or a decade. But social can actually move faster. We pretty much have a lot of things, and what we're working now with on Lens, we're focusing on the scalability aspect. So how do we scale Lens so that it can actually host millions of users and transactions simultaneously? Because you can't really run a social network where you have only, let's say, 10, 20, 50,000 transactions, you know, per second. That's just, you know, the peak of some of these social platforms can be 30 million transactions per second. So the level of scalability has to be very wide. And that's what we're focusing now. And the next things we're also focusing is the privacy aspect and figuring that out as well, and giving just more choices for developers to build on Lens and build these amazing experiences. So we're very early in the space, but I think over time it's going to be like a marathon to win bigger audiences in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we run out of time, a couple of questions I definitely want to get in. So I don't think my listeners will forgive me if I don't ask you about a Lens token coming up. Is that in the works?
Well, I don't really like, I mean, what I like about Lens now is that, like, personally, is that it's really community driven. The protocol is open source. Anyone can build and use it. And obviously, like, any improvements into the ecosystem, to the protocol itself, can happen through Lens improvement proposals. So it's in a really cool state. And obviously, there's still so much to be built. I just think that even the infrastructure is still kind of like, there's so much to build there. So it's going to be a really long journey. And DeFi is going to be also long. So whoever is kind of like following and participating in the ecosystem, I'll definitely like say that. And in Lens community, people know that, you know, winning decentralized social will take time. And this couldn't be possible with all this technology improving as well. So basically being able to see rollups and more scalability, it's really just tailwind for building consumer-facing social apps that are powered by on-chain. Mm.
Okay, so basically it'll depend on the community?
Well, it's the way I would say is my mind is now on scalability. That's where I'm basically focusing now.
Okay, got it. And then about Aave, like I said before, it's now become the biggest lending protocol. You have a stable coin. There seems to be this roadmap to really own like all the major pieces of DeFi. So I'm curious about what the next milestones are for Aave.
Yeah, I mean, for Aave, obviously, like the version 3 protocol has really proven quite significant traction. I mean, it has, the protocol itself has over 50% of market share, over, it was like 80 or above 80% of like just code base market share. This was like by token terminal noted like a couple of months ago. But I think for what's important, like obviously like in Aave, there's a DAO that is pretty much managing most of the kind of like activities. There's service providers. It's the most decentralized system I've seen where you need participation that actively. I'm really surprised how much people care about the Aave as a protocol and as a kind of a financial infrastructure and as a DAO. And it's interesting to see like there's other developers there. There's smart contract auditors that contribute ongoing basis, treasury managers and so forth. But I do think that there's a lot of innovation still to do on the lending and borrowing space and DeFi in general. So Aave has always historically had very high rate of innovation. So that's what I will expect for the upcoming years to come. And hopefully for the benefit that Aave kind of, you know, becomes a protocol that also gets a lot of adoption in the future and part of other DeFi protocols becomes like a basis for a basis of a financial system at some point. But I think we're a little bit far from that. But I would just expect more innovation from the Aave community.
For example, like what would you like to see get built?
I would like to definitely like see being built a little bit more optimized version of Aave, in the sense that I do like the model that the way that Aave is built today. It's really like functional. It's really easy to use. You don't have these different kinds of vaults that are confusing. You just go into one place, supply whatever you need, and draw the liquidity you need. Just like thinking like that main use case and optimizing that even further. And I do think there is a ways to do that. That's kind of like a main thing. And I think down the line, we have to think about a little bit more on how to kind of like think of Go and in a ways of bringing new facilitators, thinking about real world assets in the future, and also like what's Go's positioning, because obviously like there's a strong need for decentralized stable coins in this whole like a wider stable coin spectrum. So what is the amount of RWA should be backing, for example, Go? And I think it's kind of like a debate that every community will with a stablecoin will have. But yeah, overall, I would say like innovation in terms of like Aave protocol and Go.
With Aave now having a stablecoin, it has become in a way more directly competitive with Maker. And I know that DeFi and Web3, you know, people don't like to talk about competition, you know, everything's composable and so on, but you are, you know, fulfilling the same kind of function. So how do you see Aave positioning itself versus Maker and other, you know, similar protocols?
Yeah, competition is really weird in Web3. Mm-hmm. Like it's, you have people that kind of understand things are composable and you see a lot of fair competition and then you see a lot of like, a little bit maybe like less of like sportsmanship in Web3. So I just think like everyone is doing amazing work, those who are like building for the future and building for long term. I think in terms of like Go, the idea is that the risk management is part of Go compared to the other protocols. So I would expect Go to be more conservative in terms of a stable coin and what is actually backing Go. So that's my kind of like a thinking, that there's a lot of room for adding and backing a stable coin that is with more conservative collaterals. I think that's might be the positioning for Go. But Go is still quite small, so it takes time to grow a stable coin. And obviously, DAI has grown for years doing the DeFi summer, liquidity mining incentives, and including the campaigns in Aave. So definitely there's a kind of like a good few years ahead from that. But I think having that conservative approach might be a very good place for Go.
Awesome. Super interesting. And then just rounding things up, tying back to Lens, how do you or do you see Lens and integrating some of Aave into the protocol?
I think some ways that might be the case. I think for Lens, there might be some leverage using Aave, not just for like treasury management of the protocol, but also in terms of like being able to do some of these actions directly on Lens feeds, for example. So I do think there's going to be some sort of synergy there. And there's a lot of Aave community users that are using Lens. So I do think that there might be some interesting synergies for sure.
Awesome. Okay, and then final question. You've mentioned a couple of times in our conversation that you think that DeFi is still not there yet to become this like underlying, you know, financial layer, and neither is Web3 social. So what do you think is missing? And you know, like what's exciting to you in the next year or so that again, like that you want to see get built so that we can get there?
I think it's overall just letting these protocols to mature is one kind of like aspect of it. So if we're rebuilding a financial infrastructure and making it more open, transparent, auditable, and just, you know, a better system for people, what it really requires is time and maturity and seeing like which one of these protocols are built for the long term. I think what we need is actually time than anything else. It sounds like a little bit boring answer, but I just think that like last thing DeFi needs is kind of like a short period financial opportunities that really kind of might add additional risk and you know, blow up the whole system. I'd rather like see more like conservative approaches and developers focusing on the building better experiences and the front end of the DeFi and just like having more maturity and stability in DeFi. I sound like, you know, boring old DeFi guy, but that's what I think will be needed for adoption.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Cool, Stani, really appreciate you coming back on the Defiant podcast. Really great to see all the ladies with Lens and Ave. This was great. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.